if you were hearing Robert Randolph and the Family Band on Sunday night, listening to FamilyNetRadio.com, you are listening to Tal Prince Live, and we are glad you are. Glad to have you with us back in your weekly Pharisee-free zone. No topic off limits, no sin beyond grace. That's the way we like it. That's the way of the gospel, and so that's the way we do it here. And we're glad to have you with us tonight. Hope you are doing well. We had a great show last week. Lots of good response to that, and so we hope you enjoyed that, as you said you did, and that it was helpful to many of you, and we got some good response to that. So thank you for that. And if you've got other questions and suggestions, please let us know that. You can email hope@talprincelive.com. You can also just let us know at our Facebook page, Tal Prince Live Radio, there at Facebook. We'd love to have you there interacting, and we want to invite you to go there tonight. We are going to be talking about a topic that I think many of us have experienced. Some of us have not. But let me just ask you, if you were a favorite child, or were you wishing that you were the favorite child, and there was a clear favorite and it was not you? Is that your story? Is that part of your upbringing? Or were you just kind of one of these golden children that in the eyes of your parents could do no wrong? That's more me. I really personally didn't have that was not our story in our family. There wasn't a favorite. There wasn't a clear favorite, but I know that's true for a lot. So if you're a parent, do you have a favorite child? If you've got more than one, if you have only one child, you're excused from this quiz. But if you have more than one child, do you have a favorite? And how do you manage that? And how do you deal with that? Do you have a favorite? So this is what we're going to talk about tonight. And we have our very own special monthly guest, Alice Haygood Chernock, in studio. Alice, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm excited. I think this is going to be fun.
Yeah, me too. I think that this is something that doesn't get talked about very much. So mm-hmm. I'm really jazzed to go into it.
If you're jazzed, we're happy.
I'm jazzed. And I am. Yeah.
This is good. And then to my immediate right is my lovely wife, Teresa. How are you?
Hi, sweetie. Good.
Just back from a Wellspring group, Battle for Women's Heart.
Yes.
Started Thursday, got back today, and glad to have you back.
Thank
I know the
you.
Girls are glad to have you back, particularly our youngest. Very,
yeah.
Very happy to have you back. Dad was not cutting it for the youngest after a point. So I don't know if you've got a favorite child, but children often have favorite parents. Let's just say.
No.
I know. They love me. It was fun. We had a good time, but they missed their mom.
Oh.
And that's good. So glad to have you back.
Thanks, sweetie.
Garrett, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing okay. I am missing my wife. My wife
yes,
is in
are.
Beautiful San Francisco, and I am missing her greatly. She left last Sunday and won't get back until late Thursday. Barely in time for it to even still be Thursday by the time she gets back.
Huh? Wow.
And I'm under the weather a little bit. It would have been nice to have had my wife to take care of me. Man, I turn into such a baby when I'm sick.
Yeah.
But other than that, sir, I'm doing just
right,
fine.
Right.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like to play?
Exactly.
That's very nice. All right, fantastic. Well, so let's talk. I mean, as we were getting ready to go to break, let me just ask you the question. Do you, if you're a parent, do you have a favorite? When you were growing up, were you a favorite or were you not? Was there a favorite in your family and not you? And how did that impact you? How did you deal with that? How did it affect you? And how did being a favorite affect you? Or do you feel like your parents told you were a favorite to manipulate you?
Ooh, there's a little twist.
Come on. This is what I do. I twist things. But I think that's valid. So is that your story? Is that anything going on? Anything you want to respond to? Go to Tal Prince Live Radio at Facebook. Just jump in there and join the discussion with us. We've got Greg Oliver, a perennial, is there already. So come in and jump in with us. And I also, on the other side of the break, I'm going to recommend a link to you. We'll just put it in the Facebook page to an article written by our very own Casey Seabass Hobbs over at Relevant Magazine. Second published article for him there, so that's good. So you're listening to Tal Prince Live Radio on FamilyNetRadio.com. We'll be right back. B.B. King. Thank you, Garrett.
You hear the name of that song, Tal? I'm sure you do.
Oh, I need a little bit more because I wasn't thinking about it.
Darling, you know I love you.
That is right. That is right. And thank you for that.
These children in our favorites know that they're loved by their parents.
Well played. All right, so here we go. We're talking about favorites tonight. We're talking about parents that have favorites, the parental favorite, the family favorite vibe. Okay, a lot of us grew up in that where there was a clear favorite child, and you were either it or not. Some of us grew up and that was not an issue. And some of us that are parents have a favorite kid. And I know a lot of you are not going to freely admit to having a favorite child.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm aware of that.
And I don't know that that's a bad thing either. Oh. You know, I mean, certainly if you admit to having a favorite child, don't tell us which one.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Do not do that. Yes, no.
Right. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. because the internet is forever. So don't do that. This was a suggestion by our favorite monthly visitor, our monthly guest, Alice Chernock, licensed professional counselor at Covenant Counseling and Education Center, which we highly recommend if you're in the Birmingham area, 879-7500 if you're here locally. I've dialed it a few times.
Impressive.
So we do recommend them to you, but... anyway, this was an idea that Alice had and struck her because tell us how you got
here. Well, I can't take full credit for it because it was an article. It was actually blown up all over the cover of Time magazine maybe a week or two ago. And the cover of it was titled "Why Mom Liked You Best."
Wow.
And it was the science of favoritism, you know? And so it struck my eye because it was in our waiting room and I was, you know, passing by and I was going to get a client and then I saw the big, you know, yellow cover. And so I grabbed it and I just thought that is so interesting because it's something we really don't talk about a ton.
Yeah.
But the article was going into how it said that 65% of moms, they did a study and they found that 65% of moms, they could find clear-cut signs of favoritism in the moms.
Wow.
And 70% of the dads had very clear-cut signs that they had one child that they favored over another.
What percentage of the dads?
65% of the moms and 70% of the dads. Yeah. And here's the really interesting part. And this kind of, to me, is like the lead-in. And I'm so interested to hear what... the discussion group has to say about this, but they found that typically the favorite child is the oldest. And the guy after he wrote the Time magazine article, I mean, it blew up all over the media. And he was on the Today Show this maybe last week or week before talking about this article. And he was saying that the oldest child is typically considered the favorite child. And there are several reasons. They said that it's, you know, the child typically the parents have been wanting, you know, it's the first time they were all excited about it, that kind of thing. But then he also cited a business term called sunk costs. And so it's the idea of sunk costs, meaning that you have your first child.
Mm-hmm.
You invest all of this time, energy, expense, calories, everything into this child. So by the second one coming along, you already have all of these sunken costs into the first child.
Wow.
That kind of carries over and you know, perpetuates this cycle of favoritism.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting, huh? That's what I thought, too. That's exactly what I was like, really?
You know, it's great to hear that because then... You can be deliberate with your second or third or fourth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Now, the article was really good. And I think, too, I want to say this, just take it with a grain of salt, okay? You know, it is just one article. It is not truth. Mm-hmm. You know, scripture is the only truth.
Good.
Right?
Right.
But it is interesting just to kind of think about and to have this, you know, in the back of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not the oldest child, the article was talking about how usually it's the child who is most similar to the parent.
Huh.
So the child who shares similar personality traits or even what does the parent value? Does the parent value sports? So if so, it's going to typically be the child who's the super great athlete, the all-star.
So question on personality. Is it that the parent kind of leans toward the child who is actually more more opposite of them because they... You know, or is it the one that's more like them? Because often the ones that are more alike tend to grind against each other more.
Well, I think that it's the parent's ideal, whatever the parent's ideal is. You know, so if they value somebody who is really, really social and outgoing and that kind of thing, then that's probably going to be what they would say is a very good attribute, and therefore it's going to go that way. If they see that characteristic in themselves, and that's something that they're proud of, their ability to be a social butterfly or work a room or you know, whatever, and then they also see that in their child, that's going to perpetuate the cycle of favoritism. The article called it biological narcissism. And I love that. Like, what a great classic phrase, you know? Biological
narcissism. Because I was thinking, I mean, what
classic
lies...
Classic may be a bit early to assign classic. It may be a bit early. since it's the first time I've heard it. You know, but it's a fascinating phrase.
It is fascinating. All right, fine. We will change that.
No, I like that picture, though, because it shows.
I'm not weighing in on the classic.
Right, right.
But the narcissism part, to see that, I mean, the parent is so coming from what they love, what they admire, not the heart of their children.
Right. And the guy who wrote the article, his name is Jeffrey Kluger, and he was talking about how he, in his mind, just the idea of procreation is like the most narcissistic thing that anybody ever does anyway. And so he is saying that, you know, the whole point is that we want to pass our genes along and we want to have this continuation of, you know, our legacy and that kind of thing. Now, whether you agree with that or not, you know, we could kind of go both ways. But I think that there are some very valid points. You know, and some people may very well be that way, you know?
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So personal question. In, you know, growing up, were there noticeable favorites in your world?
I would say yes.
You would say yes?
I would say yes.
Okay.
I would say yes. But I also think that there are noticeable favorites depending on season of life, too. You know what I mean? I was thinking about that. I had a feeling I know you. I knew that question was going to come from you. My thought is that during different seasons, you know, I think different parents appreciate certain age groups or, you know, whether it's school plays or cooking together or, you know, things like that, that sometimes kids will grow into or grow out of. So I would say yes, I could definitely tell favorites, even though hands down my parents would say, we love you all the same. You know, and of course they're your parents, they gotta say that, you know. It's not like they're gonna be
Was that
like,
always your answer to that? You have to say that.
Yes, of course it was. I mean, what are they gonna say? Yeah, you're my favorite. You know? Sorry, two sisters, you're screwed.
Sorry, sucks to be you.
Oh, well, hang it up. What about you?
Really, honestly, that was not a play in our family.
Yeah.
I really didn't. If it was, I never knew it, never sensed it. And always, you know, my mother, which I'm sure is listening, hi, Mom, would say absolutely, I mean, would say what your parents said, you know, that we love you all the same.
Right.
We love both. I have one sister, so, you know, we love you both the same. And I really believe that. I honestly do. So let's now turn to my lovely wife, Teresa, and say, babe, what about you?
I would say that I put favorite or kind of rise to the top with easiest in my family.
Okay. Ooh. All right. So those two are kind of synonymous.
I would think, yes. I mean, if you're just kind of that easy kid, you're not causing trouble, you're not making waves, that felt like more acceptance.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And I think that is true, that a lot of times the favorite child is typically the child that makes the parents feel good, or feel competent or feel successful or, you know, make them look good or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever,
yeah.
you know, that. So I can totally see what you're saying.
They're the ones
yeah.
that mom and dad say to the non-favorites, why can't you be more like?
Mm.
Yeah. Oh. And I, you know, my having a younger sister who, mm-hmm. I loved good grades. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, mm-hmm. and so she grew up under having a teacher that I had mm-hmm. and then not making the same grades.
Wow.
Oh, same teacher?
That's really, brutal.
Yeah, and I mean, she was, but then she got to college and found what she loved.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's mm-hmm. so successful.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
so it's, I look back and I think, oh man, I wish she could have realized mm-hmm. all that mm-hmm. she was made for
right.
back then
right.
and mm-hmm. not been compared to me.
Right,
because
yeah.
we were made for two completely different
uh-huh.
paths.
Oh, man. Oh,
and on
man.
The line of same teacher right there, I went to a small Christian private yeah. school, and yeah. I mean, it happened all the time that, like, yeah. teachers would call people in my class by their older siblings' names.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so, I mean, so I'm sure on Family Net Radio, we've got listeners out there that have their kids in small
Safe
Christian
bet.
Schools.
So Safe bet.
That happens even more in small mm-hmm. Christian schools.
Yeah.
yeah.
Now, was there a clear favorite in your house growing yeah. up?
I was 10 years old when my baby sister was born.
Yeah.
And so I don't really feel like that much. I've never really thought about it.
Yeah. yeah, basically you're an only.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because by the time my sister came, I mean, I was like pumped there was a baby in the house. And I, if anything, if I was jealous of anything, it was the baby spending time with the parents instead of me getting to spend time mm. with the baby. I wanted to spend time with the baby. So,
what a great brother you are.
That's Garrett Irby.
That's
ladies.
Awesome.
Except when she ruined me from playing my Nintendo games. That yeah, that would get on my nerves.
Yeah, don't come between
that
you
was
and video
a
games.
Deal breaker.
Doesn't end well. Does not end well.
That's funny.
I do want to ask a question, because I know we're getting ready to go to break. But for the easy kids, for the ones that, you know, quote unquote, didn't cause trouble and were mm-hmm. easy, or at least appeared so,
mm-hmm.
Which was my story. Did you ever, though, feel like the ones that were creating commotion and causing trouble and garnering so much of mom and dad's attention were at, did you feel like they were a favorite because there was so much attention thrust
Even
toward
it
them
negative attention
yeah
the for me I felt like being easy was a burden because mm. once I kind of got that praise for being an easy kid I had to stay there.
Oh,
so
wow.
the times that I wanted to feel sad or wanted to feel needy, I'm just coming in touch
oh wow
with I need to need people.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But I grew up thinking it is much better if I take care of myself.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so that was a lie I believed, and not one that my parents made me believe, but just the way life was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I took that on and prided myself in being self-sufficient.
Wow.
Mm.
And so I didn't know. I thought, oh, my, look at her getting in that trouble. She is so wild.
Mm-hmm.
How did she get that way?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it was full of pride for me.
Well, yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
I mean, look how much self-control I have.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
that wasn't good for me. I mean, it served me well.
Uh-huh.
It, it had a lot of people like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was crushing me inside as much as if I got punished for sneaking out and all of those things.
And so then you wound up being attracted to a guy who looked like he wasn't causing trouble.
Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing is, though, that God has redeemed our marriage and brought us to such a sweet place. So if I had to go through being such a fake nicey, I'm glad that it led me to you.
Aww. We're kind of sappy
Garrett,
tonight.
You need to receive that.
Garrett and Alice will do the rest of the show. We'll see y'all next week.
And,
all right, we're going to break. Tal Prince Live on FeminineRadio.com.
I'm crazy. You are my baby. I'm just your fool.
Father of mine, tell me where have you been? You know I just closed my eyes, my whole world disappeared. Father of mine, take me back to the day. Yeah, when I was still your golden boy, back before you went away.
Yeah.
I remember blues.
Ah, thank you, Garrett.
Yeah, I love that line about being the golden boy right there. Doesn't that so go with the topic that we've got here?
I cannot identify with that in any way.
Were you ever actually called the golden boy? Were you ever named that?
No. But I think for so many that roll through addiction, very many, and I think it was true for me. And again, you know, absolutely unintentional, you know, on my parents' part, particularly my mom. But there's this kind of, my child can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And of course, as far as she knew and what I was telling her was the truth, was I was perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
She had no idea. My poor mom was using me for illustrations to Bible study classes, having no idea what my real world was like and how, you know, the depth and darkness that I was involved in. And she had no clue. Mm. Which ends up putting a lot of pressure on. But that's where so much shame comes from, is she thought, you know, wow, I mean, what a great kid. Mm-hmm. And people would say that, and I could put that image up, and my pose was just perfect.
Yeah.
But behind that, the weight of that, it was completely self-imposed. Yeah. I did it because I refused to be honest.
Yeah.
It's not my parents' fault. My mom didn't make me that. I presented her that image,
mm-hmm.
And lived under the crushing strain and weight of that, and then medicated as a result.
Mm-hmm.
You want to say
well,
something.
I mean, we talked about parental narcissism. Or whatever that mm-hmm. was, biological narcissism. Right?
Repeat that classic phrase, will you?
Well, wait, no. I think if you're talking about this, it shows even in children how narcissism, mm. I mean, that you would allow your mom to do those illustrations and still not find a way to tell. I mean, you kind of lived under that same. I was living under the easy child. You were presenting
the good child, the golden boy.
Bible illustration worthy.
Wow. Yes. And I live that, and so many men that I've dealt with and that struggle with, you know, pornography or sex or are addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's their story. Mom and dad have just made them just like, you know, I mean, angels sing mm-hmm. at the sound of the name,
mm-hmm.
That it's just, mm-hmm. you know, there they are.
Yeah.
And I know that creates static for the other kids in the family,
mm-hmm.
if that's true. Alice has some great information on birth order, and I want to talk about how that plays into this, or did you have something you wanted
to... Yeah, no, go ahead.
And I will say, Jonathan McIntosh on Twitter came back with a quote from Susanna Wesley that I love the one who's sick until he's well and the one who's away until he comes home.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, I like that. Can we call it classic, or
you can call it classic because
category.
I mean, you're Alice Chernock. we've also got some comments at the Facebook page that some of the folk that, you know, were clearly not favorites, I can just feel the pain in saying that. I mean, you know, Whitney came back with, what's the opposite of favorite? I asked, you know, were you a favorite child or not? And she said, what's the opposite of favorite?
Oh, wow.
And so you just kind of hear the pain of that.
The brokenness, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's so true that when I know this is kind of deviating from the birth order thing, but mm-hmm. going, when I do an intake with parents, you know, since I do work with mostly adolescents, when I always meet with the parents first.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that I typically ask is, what is your child's role in the family?
Mm.
Who is your child? Who would you say your child is? Are they the golden boy? Are they the easy one? Are they the, you know, the difficult one, the black sheep, the, you know, who is that? And then the tables turned and I ask, who would you say your child would say they are, you know, how would your child define themselves? Because I think I think that so many times kids get the rap as, you know, I'm the dumb one, or I'm the troublemaker, or I'm the hard one, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I think really a lot of it, I mean, this kind of goes into the personality stuff, but it feeds the problem. You know, if a child has that label already on them, then, you know, a lot of times it's a lot easier to live the label than try to change it, you know?
Yeah, and I think everybody kind of gets a role and a name, that becomes hard to undo later on. I mean, I see that in particularly in a lot of families where there's been a great deal of abuse. You know, you see one kid or all the kids have labels and roles.
Mm-hmm.
And
they change, you know?
Yeah.
Depending on the stage, you know, of the addiction, or, you know, the financial circumstances or the stress level in the home, whatever it is, you know, I mean, I think that the labels can always be different, you know?
Yeah. I always responded to stress with humor, which I know is a great stunner to everyone here at the table. So let's get to birth order because a lot of people are always fascinated by this.
Yeah.
And you as a counselor have information on this.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, and I think that I want to emphasize that these are stereotypical.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that for the most part we can say a lot of times they do ring true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, as with every stereotype, there are those that don't follow that, and so in thinking about birth order, take this with what it is, and I think it's interesting that we can use information like this in our parenting, how to handle this, what to expect, also really just how to know our own stuff. Knowing your birth order, and that's another thing, the parent's birth order is going to have a big impact on the child themselves. And so, I'm sorry. I just have to say it right now. Garrett just took his sweater off, and we're all laughing. So that's what that was about. Back to birth order. So,
and you're like a radio pro, Alice. It's fantastic.
You got to take that moment and just run with it.
We're all a bunch of pros around here, obviously. I couldn't wait till the break to do that.
Thank you. So which one should we start with?
Let's go with first, because since that plays into the kind of the favorite thing. Again, Alice, quote earlier, this article that's in Time magazine, 65% of moms have a favorite, 70% of dads have a favorite, and very often it's the first.
Yeah.
Firstborn. So let's talk about firstborn.
All right, firstborn, here you go. All right, Teresa. Typically, the firstborn is more conservative. They typically follow the rules pretty well. Mm-hmm. They really, a lot of times, want to be seen as another adult, And so when the second child comes, most of them feel very dethroned. Mm-hmm. And the privileges, the rights, all of that is taken away. And so a lot of times the firstborn will spend the rest of their years proving to the parent that they deserve to have that throne again.
Wow.
And showing them, I'm going to be an adult. I see what I can do. Look, I didn't mess up. I didn't do this, and said that.
I was easy.
Exactly. I was easy.
Wow.
Right. I don't need that. Typically, they are the socially dominant ones. Mm-hmm. So they can walk into a room and they can rule it. They can know what to do. A lot of times, if the oldest is a guy, they will take the dad's profession.
Mm.
So that's an interesting study that's been done that they've found that oldest males are more likely to find their dad's profession.
Wow.
And follow in those footsteps. Yeah. But again, they really are the ones that want to prove, that they are the best. They are the one that you don't mess with. I was here first. And I'm glad she's laughing.
The laugh of guilt.
I know,
from my
exactly. A lot of them feel that power is my right.
Yeah.
I have a right to be powerful, but, they can be very, very helpful if they're given encouragement, and that's something that parents, I want you to hear me out on that. If you have an oldest child, typically they are going to need that encouragement. So make sure that you can shower them with that, and really let them know that those characteristics, those leadership qualities that a firstborn typically is going to exhibit are awesome. Mm-hmm. We've got to be able to rein them in.
Yeah.
We've got to mold them. We've got to develop them. But man, those firstborns, those are the ones that are going to be the presidents and typically the CEOs and, that kind of thing of the companies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Does that ring
true?
Yeah,
what do you think?
Well, I think because my parents divorced when I was 8.
Mm.
So I was only the firstborn in my natural home for a short time. So I think all of those qualities, my sister felt like I was her rock.
Mm-hmm.
So I think instead of them really being used, they might have been used negatively in me, but mm-hmm. I think at that time I naturally filled mom because we lived with my dad.
Yes.
So I don't know that I had the conflict, the competition with my mom because I didn't have a mom to compete with.
Right.
She was across the country.
And I think that's a really good point that you bring up, that a lot of times with oldest children, they can either develop the sense of entitlement or a sense of responsibility.
I think I was on the, I say duty was what ran my life.
Yes, that's absolutely it. And so as long as, if the responsibility aspect is very tamed and nurtured and, you know, then a lot of times later on in life, the oldest child will have great relationships with their siblings. They can be very friendly, have great relationships. They can, you know, with their spouse or a boss or a colleague or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet on the other hand, if the oldest child adopts that mentality of entitlement, that's a lot of times where the addiction stuff leads in, where you can have issues with bosses and, you know, that just this the sense of entitlement.
Yeah,
you know,
so I definitely on this. That responsibility. Mm-hmm. I took the responsibility way because I didn't, even today, I feel like I care for myself. Mm-hmm. Like I would not compete with her for anything.
Right, right. Yeah, I hear you.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you. We're going to jump to break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Tao Prince Live Radio on FamilyNetRadio.com. We'll be right back. Johnny Lang. That's a great album, by the way. Well, anything Johnny Lang's put out is good. Just go, just download it. You'll be glad you did. Or go to Mog, which is just a fantastic thing. I save a lot of dough every month on Mog now. So Mog.com, do yourself a favor. Tell them I sent you. I'll get a free month. Thanks. Okay, so here we go. Alice is giving me this look like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I have no idea what Mog is.
Okay, quick free commercial for Mog. Mog is a service that you can go to. You know Pandora?
Yeah.
It's like Pandora on steroids. Okay. Because the thing that always drives me crazy about Pandora is I would say, I want to listen to Johnny Lang.
Uh-huh.
And then they would give me like one Johnny Lang song and like 30 artists that they deemed similar.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Some close, some not.
Right.
And I'm just sitting, you know, don't like. And then you're only allowed, you know, unless you subscribe, you're only allowed so much of that. But you can't even go to an album or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So Mog, you can say, I want to listen to Johnny Lang. And there's a little slider for a radio switch. So I want to listen to only Johnny Lang.
Oh.
I want to listen to this album by Johnny Lang. Mm. I want to listen to this song.
Wow.
Or I do want to go ahead and have some similar artists. And there's a slider switch as to how many of those artists can come in.
Mm.
It's fantastic, and it's you pay for it. You pay for it by the month.
Right.
You can do it on your computer, and you can do it on your iPhone or Droid device.
Oh, that's nice.
So that so on my iPhone, I can download albums onto my iPhone. Hmm. I'm not buying them, so I don't own them. I can't put them on my computer.
Okay.
But if I'm out of network or something, I'm in the in East Bumble driving someplace and I don't have signal.
Uh-huh.
I can go to what's on my iPhone. And you can make custom playlists. There's all kinds of stuff you can do.
Wow.
So Mog,
well,
do
go
yourself.
Mog.
Nah, that's what I'm talking about. So do yourself a favor and I'll tell them I sent you.
Okay. So I have a story that made me think of that.
Oh, cool.
This has nothing to do with birth order, but I just have to tell you this because this was one of the funniest things that has ever happened to me.
Alice Chernock
talking
hijacking
about,
the show.
Yes, yeah. Well, talking about things that I've never heard of and, you know, whatever. Mm. So I had this client last week, and she's in college. She's at Auburn. And so a lot of times with clients that I see, we'll have Skype sessions now, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so she's telling me this story, and she says, she looks at me dead in the eyes, which is, you know, across the computer screen,
uh-huh.
dead in the eyes, and say, she's telling the story very serious, and she's like, you know, I mean, like, do you know who Dave Matthews is?
Oh.
I was like, I'm old. I was like, yes, I know Dave Matthews. I'm really, how old do you think I am?
That's so sad.
Dave Matthews.
I saw that on your Facebook this week.
Yes, was.
I saw your pain.
Yes. Wow. It was one of those, and it was one of those moments that we both like looked at each other and just burst out laughing because I was so stumped.
That's, oh, wow. Okay.
All right.
Stumped and old. All right. So let's.
I think it was your wisdom, not your sweet young face.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the babies.
All right. We're going. Or are we skipping the middles?
No. Well, they always get skipped. They're used to it.
Okay.
I kid.
Oh, I was going to say poor middles.
I set that up.
Man.
So let's talk about the middles. Let's go.
All right. Middles, well, you nailed it. They are typically the ones that feel sandwiched. Mm-hmm. They get squeezed out. And so middles a lot of times have a hard time. I have, my heart goes out to middle kids, you know. The interesting is that they may be very even-tempered. Mm. You know, they can typically take it or leave it. Mm-hmm. But middles are a conundrum. Because middles, they usually are the dichotomies, you know. Ooh. Middles either are the loners or they're very social. They can either be very laid back or very intense.
Wow.
You know. They can either be very aggressive or they can completely avoid conflict whatsoever, you know. And so middles, they kind of don't fall into the typical.
They defy definition.
They really do. Mm-hmm. They defy all kinds of definition. They are typically great negotiators.
Wow.
And it makes sense, you know. Yeah. If you're in the middle, you've got one above you and one below you, you're a lot of
working
times having to deal with both ends of the spectrum. So they typically are very good at that, but a lot of times they have a hard time finding their place, you know. So I always encourage parents, you know, in dealing with middle children, really give them some extra attention and find what that middle child is very good at and really let them shine and develop that.
Here's a question for you, and you may not have this information, but I'm interested now just talking about this to know what percentage of your client base that are, you know, that are coming, that are adolescents, because you do a lot of adolescents.
Right.
What percentage of them are first, middles, or babies?
I honestly don't know. In the time that it would take me to think about that and chew on it.
Yeah, I'd be fascinated to know, like, which group is the largest percentage.
She'll add that to her intake form.
You know, really, what's your birth order?
Do you have that information would be my question.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that I could honestly say, and I'm thinking because, you know, I do a whole lot of work with eating disorders and body image and stuff like that. And typically anorexics are oldest.
There we go.
They're very perfectionistic and, you know, the type A personality. And yet bulimics, on the other hand, are typically the youngest. They're more carefree, more, you know, wild and crazy. They compare the two of, you know, the Marsha Brady being the oldest, you know.
Jan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Brady Bunch, let me tell you, the Brady Bunch is a fabulous example of birth order. You know, if you ever want great, great examples of who is who, go to the Brady Bunch and look. I mean, for both the guys and the girls.
That's great.
Yeah, they really do. They really do explain both, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, think about Cindy. I mean, I know, I'm sorry, we're skipping poor middles. Yep, we're skipping on over to the youngest.
But again, they're used to it.
Y'all are youngest, right? Tal is.
Yeah.
You too.
I am, definitely.
Babies, come on. Garrett was an oldest, so you're old. Let's move into the babies. You got Cindy Brady.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, think about poor Cindy Brady. Mm-hmm. The whole show, I mean, think of how long the Brady Bunch ran for. Mm-hmm. Cindy Brady never got to take her hair out of pigtails. How sad is that? This is like a 14-year-old still. Those producers are like, you're wearing pigtails.
You're wearing the pigtails, kid.
Yeah, exactly. And that really exemplifies a lot of what the youngest child is, that they are a lot of times seen as the baby.
Yeah.
And never really outgrow that place, but also don't necessarily want to outgrow that place, you know, because I think, at least for me, most youngest children are very happy accepting help. They're very content to have other people to come. You know, I'm laughing. I was thinking about this. My my son was sick for the last couple of weeks. And my sweet, sweet mom was like, I'll come help. That's what grandmothers are for. And so sweet. And I'm like, all right.
How many days you coming?
Exactly. No lie. She gets sick. And I mean, of course, I feel horrible. And she's the oldest in her family.
Wow.
The responsible one, the caretaker. Exactly. So it really does. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, very comfortable accepting help. And is there any data or any information that you have on how they are with asking for help versus manipulating to get it?
Well, I think that that's a good point because they are, I've never thought about it like that, but youngest are very manipulative.
Yes.
We know how to get what we want. You know, we know how to work the system, whether it's to turn on the cute charm or the sad charm or, you know, we'll pull your heartstrings or we'll, you know, tweak this or whatever. But we're pretty good at you know, manipulating situations and people in order to get what we want, you know.
My wife giving me the knowing glance.
You're busted.
I did it to myself. I brought it up. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Teresa was giving me the eyebrows like, that would be you. That's what I'm talking
about. That's funny.
Yeah, Cindy Brady, interesting that you bring her up, and I don't know what her order was in family, but she really grew up on television for a large degree and grew up as a baby. Huge drug addiction problems, became a kind of a low grade porn star for a while, but you know, got in recovery. Now she's a she's been well years ago anyway. I think she still is, but she was a DJ on K Rock out in L.A. You know, so and very successful at it. Very, very successful at it. So you know, did very well in radio, but had a really painful.
It's a tough go. Well, and I think that that is it makes sense too because youngest children are typically more carefree. Light-spirited, and a lot of times we're okay with, I mean, look at both of us on the radio, you know, we're okay with being out in public and doing plays or social events or, you know, get us on a stage and we can thrive.
You know? We like that place.
Right, exactly. And so I think it feeds our attention. You know, getting peace, you know.
Yeah, and babies very often engage in far riskier behavior than the others. And that may not be publicly so, but I think how much of that is related to, though, to the olders being able to manipulate the youngers into trying it? you know, they know they're old and wise enough to know I may break a bone doing that. Let's get the baby to do
exactly.
It. Exactly. Because we're so desperate for acceptance. We'll be like, yes, we'll try
sure.
it.
Will you love me?
Well, I think the parents get tired, but the parent, you know, the first time you let your oldest go spend the night by themselves, or, you know, there's so much.
Yeah.
That's true.
So much involved with that, kind of that emotional bank or whatever. But I can see even that it's a lot easier to let your youngest go spend the night because you've done that. You've been separated and so they come back. I mean, it seemed like the youngest in my family got permission for things a year or two earlier than
she did. The oldest, I think, have a far more restrictive time, but you know, because parents, it's their first time and they're worried and they're like, we don't know, we got to be very careful, got to do everything right. And then by the time the baby comes along, you know, we're swinging from the chandelier and nobody really cares.
Well, it's because just the parents have been, the parents have been thoroughly embarrassed at that point and they don't care anymore, you know, like all shock and shame is over with, you know.
And so we try to take it to new heights.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's interesting. So let's just kind of circle back around here and talk about so many parents having favorites. And I like a bit of that article in Time Magazine, you know, kind of one of his major points is, you know, your parents told you they didn't have a favorite. They did. And so do you. You're kind of hardwired for that. I don't know that I agree with the hardwired for that. I would push back on that. But I think probably a lot of Christian parents would, you know, I can't say that. But it's probably very freeing to hear that, hey, listen, you don't have three heads here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that the thing is for parents to recognize that every child's desire is to be unique. Every single child, all they want to do is be unique. And so what does the parent have to do in order to foster that? Yes, there are going to be moments when one child is going through the terrible twos again and again and again and again. And it's going to be very, very hard, you know, not to form some disdain towards that child, you know? And so I think that that's human nature. And I think that that's where we all need grace as parents, you know? And so I think that you take that, you recognize what your own stuff is, realize you are going to have things that you bring to the table that you feel are important as a parent. And so knowing that kind of stuff, and then once you can recognize your stuff, it's then turn to your child and how can I foster the best this child can be, you know?
Yeah, I'm struck by some of the comments and, you know, in the Facebook page tonight. We'll hit them really quick on the other side of this break, but really, really struck by some of those. Interesting, the effects. So we'll talk about that really quickly on the other side of the break. You are listening to Tal Prince Live on FamilyNetRadio.com. Stevie. Oh, thank you. All right. A few of the comments that came in to the Facebook page, and I tell Prince Live Radio there at Facebook. Really, this one of the last ones that came in. Aaron, you know, said about being the youngest. I asked him the question, is this ringing true for you? Aaron came back with, yes, I'm the youngest, but have mixed traits because my sisters are 7 and 8 years older. So I have some oldest traits as well. But this is what really struck me. So I mostly grew up feeling bossed and not in control of my surroundings and felt like I wasn't being listened to unless I was being cute or clever.
That is such a great point. Yes, Aaron, I totally agree with that. And I think that that's a lot of things that youngest children deal with, even into adulthood. I mean, I can relate to that personally, that I feel like a lot of times I'm not taken seriously because I am the youngest, you know. I talked about my son being sick, and I love my family dearly, but I have two older sisters and a mom, all of which had their own ideas as to how I needed to take care of my child. And, you know, well, have you done this, and have you done that, and have you done, you know? And so it is. It does. It gets very frustrating.
Which basically dissolves into parents defending how they raised you.
Yes.
Well, you slept on your stomach. You turned out fine.
Exactly.
Well, several comments in there tonight that really struck me, you know, about some people kind of experiencing, you know, rebellion late in life. And Teresa, I know it's something you you identify with, just kind of like you were so good, quote unquote good, but, you know, now later in life kind of experiencing that, just kind of kickback and pushback against that.
Well, I would say it wasn't even so much I struggled very much internally to allow myself to feel anything.
Just feeling. Wow. Yeah,
besides what I needed to do. I didn't really go out and have a wild streak. I mean, I was wilder than I would have liked to have been. But as far as that, it was just really coming to grips with, can I be honest with anybody? And I just didn't realize I'd lied.
Well, I think that your word duty, I mean, I just think that that is so, that just sums up. Yeah. Exactly what you know, as an oldest child, a lot of times feel.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that sense of duty.
Yeah. And that echoes into a comment from Monique. She put in that, you know, that she had, you know, she had a sister, and, you know, she said each one of us was a favorite of the other parent, basically, but neither lived up to their expectations, but they're living healthier lives now, freed of those expectations and wishes. And I think that's a key thing for us all to grasp. And also, if you're a mom or dad and you're listening tonight and you're thinking, oh, holy crap, understand you're not going to be a perfect parent. None of us are going to be perfect parents.
Right.
God was a perfect parent, and the kids still screwed up. Okay.
Absolutely.
So relax, breathe. You know, the deal is we just have to love our kids as best we can and show them as much grace and mercy in the gospel as we can. And if you feel yourself having a favorite, you're not alone in that.
I think it's interesting too for parents. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Go.
But I think it's interesting for parents too in thinking about marriages, you know, because there's been a lot of research that's been done on oldest marrying oldests and youngest marrying an oldest, and, you know, that kind of thing, and the dynamics that occur within the marriage relationship, and then how that factors in. You know, they found that the most difficult marriage is typically between an oldest child and an oldest child.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it really does make sense because, you know, both of them are vying for that
alphas,
authority.
You know.
Exactly.
Mm,
yeah. Mm, and yet they found that the typically, again, these are just typicals, but typically the easiest marriages are ones between either an only child, which that's another group that we haven't talked very much about.
Wow, yeah.
But an only child and an oldest or a middle child.
Hmm.
Only and oldest or middle, or easiest, happiest marriages are typically between a youngest and a youngest.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I was surprised about the youngest and the youngest.
We're oldest and youngest, so we fall in that.
Yeah.
That's stunning.
Yeah.
See, I want to talk about that. We have to go off the air.
And we should. That's going to be part two.
Next month on South Prince Live with Alice Chernoff.
I like it.
Make sure you're here.
Hey, thanks so much for listening tonight. We'll be back next week. Please do send us show ideas there at the Facebook page. We want to make sure we're talking about things that interest you and that you need to hear about. So let us know. Thanks so much for listening. This has been Tal Prince Live on FamInet.com. We'll be back next week.